This is the TTY Dialer, episode 44, for the week of September 4th through September 9th. Hi there, and welcome to your weekly companion to WRVO Public Media's old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Every single night on the air, you can hear Golden Age of Radio drama, comedy, mystery, adventure, romance, science fiction, westerns, and more. Or as we air it live online at WRVO.org. This podcast is a way for us all to kind of dive deeper into the background of these shows from radio's past. We have some fun with sound from that era and a look at the shows coming up for the week.
Today, all of us are deeply troubled by the discords and divisions of the world we live in. We are frightened by the dark shadows of war, which fall across even our brightest days. How, we ask ourselves, how can we make sense out of this confused and troubled world? Well, the answer to that question isn't simple. No one of us is wise enough, no one of us is influential enough to change the immediate conditions under which we have to live. Yet there is something each one of us can do. We can start by seeing to it that we are the kind of people who are ready to live in a better world. The place to begin is with ourselves. In tonight's famous play, Cyrano's lifelong, self-denying love for Roxanne moved us deeply. How is a man able to rise to such heights of character? He did it not by crying out in bitterness over his physical ugliness. He did it not by turning his clever wit to destroy the happy marriage of Christian and Roxanne. He did it not by making over the circumstances in which he lived. He did it by making something out of himself. To win any battle with yourself isn't easy. But it's easier if you have help. It's easier if you have encouragement. It's easier if you have guidance. Well, one of the best ways to find such help is to seek it from the church and through an experienced clergyman. If you're a member of the church, you will already know from your own experience that this is true. If you're not a member of the church, we urge you to discover just how much richer your life can become, to discover just how much help you can get when you receive that which only the church can give. Or perhaps the Episcopal Church will be able to give you what you need. To assist you to know something about the Episcopal Church, what it is, what it stands for, how it offers you a faith to live by in these difficult times, we've prepared an informative booklet called Finding Your Way. Now, this booklet will be sent to you if you'll send a postcard or a letter with your name and address to the station to which you are listening.
Not so much a commercial, but a message from the sponsor of the Great Scenes from Great Plays radio show. It was a program that adapted select scenes from The Corn is Green, The Enchanted Cottage, Little Women, Cyrano de Bergerac, and more, and the only show that the National Council of the Protestant Episcopal Church funded. On the air during the Golden Age of Radio, there were many sermons and services broadcast on the air on local stations, but very few reached the national level during that time. At least ones that sponsored dramatic shows, like the Family Theater. So this series only lasted for about a year on Mutual Radio, but it was in prime time, heard Friday evenings at 8, at a time that wouldn't interrupt a typical church service, but close enough to Sunday to serve as that reminder to the majority of Christian worshipers. And while the sponsorship was sort of an advertisement to attend services, the show didn't feature biblical stories or a hard sell, but rather a suggestion to keep or restore one's faith. Often the show would weave in moments from the play as an example of that, and once in a while would delve into some stories with biblical undertones, like The Devil and Daniel Webster by Stephen Vincent Benet.
Eh? What's that?
The church bell. The church bell. The passing bell.
The funeral bell.
Who's your friend in black, Jabez?
Well, are you ready, J.B. Stone?
Where did you get your money, Jabez Stone?
What was the price you paid for it, Jabez Stone?
Help me, neighbors. Help me.
He sold his soul to the devil. That's what he's done.
That was the devil playing the fiddle.
But, neighbors, I didn't know. I didn't mean...
Sold his soul to the devil.
Go. Go, get out of here. I did. I sold my soul. I signed a bond. Go quickly. Save yourselves. There's no help for me now.
He's after us. Run! Hide!
The devil! Oh. He's following us!
This Monday night, September 4th at 10 o'clock on Tune to Yesterday, it's drama from the Damon Runyon Theater and the Hollywood Theater of Stars from 1951. After that, mystery for an hour. It's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and a broadcast of Sherlock Holmes.
You know, I'm particularly excited about hearing your story tonight. Last week, you told us that Sherlock Holmes' brother, Mycroft Holmes, took part in the adventure.
That's quite right, Mr. Bartell.
I didn't even know Mr. Holmes had a brother. I wish you'd tell me something about him.
Well, Mycroft was 7 years older than Sherlock, but the difference between them was amazing. While Holmes was lean and consumed with a burning energy, his elder brother was fat and lazy. And yet Holmes has often told me that Mycroft was his superior in powers of observation and deduction.
Well, now that you've thoroughly whetted my appetite, Doctor, how's about it?
Very well, my boy.
This Tuesday, September 5th at 10, comedy from Fibber McGee and Molly and the Judy Canova Show, then romance at 11, from the show Romance and the Screen Director's Playhouse from 1950. These shows are on the air live Monday, September 4th and Tuesday, September 5th from 10 to midnight, also streaming live at WRVO.org. The animated Walt Disney character that was the voice of reason in many cartoons was part of a unique radio presentation this Friday, September 8th in 1947, in a show called 1960 Jiminy Cricket. In it, the famous cricket with the top hat hosted a show that speculated what the world would be like 13 years into the future, based on reports filed by a group of economists who produced a book on their findings called America's Needs and Resources for the 20th Century Foundation.
Now, Frisco, Buffalo, New Orleans, why folks should be in clover. You're gonna hear what 1960 means before our show is over. So if you really want to see just how happy you will be, climb right on my song and come with me. 'Cause tomorrow's full of fun and fancy free.
The character of Jiminy Cricket strangely became a trusted voice after his first animated appearance in the 1940 movie Pinocchio, where he explained to his wooden friend of the same name the differences between right and wrong and how he played the role of his conscience. And in the actual story written by Carlo Collodi, Jiminy Cricket wasn't a part of that. And in its first release, the movie actually lost money because of the special effects in it. But the character who sang Always Let Your Conscience Be Your Guide endured through re-releases of the picture and was reintroduced as a narrator in 1947's Fun and Fancy Free, which included the cartoon Mickey and the Beanstalk. And Jiminy became part of many educational short films that Disney produced and was quickly included in episodes of TV's Mickey Mouse Club. The precedent for the Cricket's role as host and narrator was set really early on, as he was the first Disney character to really address the audience in a direct way in a movie. And from 1940 through his death in 1941, actor Cliff Edwards brought the Cricket's voice to life during radio's golden age. He was called upon kind of a lot to play the role for many on-air promotions of Disney films and for a well-received radio adaptation of Pinocchio itself on the Lux Radio Theater on Christmas Day in 1939, which was unprecedented insofar that the movie wasn't even yet in theaters. So technically, to the public, the character of Jiminy Cricket actually made his debut on radio. Here's some sound from that one-off musical documentary about the future with the cricket narrating, broadcast on September 8th, 1947.
Hang on for 1960. And there you are, 1960. Machine power is king. Machines do 96% of the work. Men and animals do 4%. And that $2,300 worth of nuts and bolts you could make back in 1850, that's up to $13,600 worth. Life is a bed of roses. Your men work 38 hours a week. You give them 2 weeks vacation with pay. And D. Duck and Company turns out almost six times as much goods. That's the machine age for you. What an age. What a life. Oh. Look out, Donald. It's beginning to sway. Steady, old man. Hold on now. Stay there, Donald. I'll call the fire department. I'll get the police. Hang on now. life from here on is going to be a cinch. You do less work, you make more money, you have your cake and eat it too.
I'm convinced. Will I do that?
The only trouble is you haven't mentioned this country's natural resources. How are we doing in that department?
Resources? How are we doing in natural resources? Why, Grumpy, this country has more and more of that stuff than anybody.
You sure about that?
Am I sure about it? Or am I sure?
Well, I'm so sure.
Where does it say so in the book, Jiminy?
Where is it? Okay, you'll see. Here it is, chapter 23, Natural Resources. Listen to this. Given a free access to the world's resources, there can be no question of a raw material supply adequate to support an expanding American economy for many decades to come. How's that, Grumpy?
You say if we have free access to the world's resources.
Yeah, yeah.
A decade is 10 years, Jiminy. Now, you say that even with the whole world supplying us, we can run for only a matter of decades. What's so wonderful?
Something called American know-how, that's what. It was on that chart. American know-how is something like turning base metals into gold.
Sounds like.
Only, of course, we do it by turning our low-grade resources into the highest quality.
How is it done?
By using power. Did you ever see the great power lines that run across this country? From great hydroelectric plants and from the giant dams, the Grand Coulee, the Bonneville up in the Pacific Northwest, Boulder in the Rockies, Norris in the Tennessee Valley, and the other ones that we're planning, the Soulanges and Lachine Rapids, Shasta and Parker. The water power turns to electric power. The electric power rides out across the land to do its work on the farms and in the mines, at the factories and laboratories. It will change coal to oil and inferior bauxite to aluminum. It will make wood as tough as steel. Look, Donald, the lifeline for America's resources are in the high-tension wires and all of their powers. No, the book hasn't got any pictures.
Can you draw a picture of it, Jiminy?
Of the high-tension wires? Well, I'll try. Got some paint?
Yeah, what's that?
And a brush?
What?
Good. Now, silver lines for the tower. There's one. And the other leg of that tower? Paint in the insulators? The steel cross-criss beams? Now the wires that stretch out to the next tower, and the next tower, and the next tower.
By the way, after Cliff Edwards passed away in 1971, the role of the voice of Jiminy Cricket was offered to actor Eddie Carroll, who late in his life actually performed a one-man show dedicated to Jack Benny. And he came to the central New York area probably about 10 years ago, and I remember sitting in the audience thinking to myself, this is as close as I'll ever come to seeing Jack Benny live on the stage. He basically recreated scripts and talked a little bit about who he was and did some of the old jokes. And as memorable as the show was, I do remember probably one of the funnier things that happened at that show, and it was before it even started. I walked in with my wife, and we were in our late 20s, I think maybe early 30s, and looking around the lobby of the high school auditorium where it was being held. I remember it was a Sunday afternoon, and we kind of noticed that we were the youngest adults there. I mean, there were some kids, but it was really for a show for the senior set, you know, people who really remember Jack Benny. And I remember walking up to the table to get tickets and said to the woman, you know, two for the show. And she looked at me and my wife and did a double take. And she says, are you sure you're at the right place? And I looked at my wife and I looked back at her and I couldn't help it. I said, yeah, isn't Guns N' Roses playing this afternoon at this high school on a Sunday? And we all laughed. Anyway, it was a really great show and a way to really connect with the past, kind of reinforcing my love and passion, quite honestly, of representing these shows. So I hope you're enjoying them as well. And this Wednesday Night Classics from Radio Westerns, The Cisco Kid and Fort Laramie from the 1940s and 50s, then An Hour of Horror from The Hermit's Cave, and one of the few remaining episodes of Cabin B-13. Then it's Thursday, September 7th at 10. It's sitcoms. We have episodes of Blondie and Our Miss Brooks.
But what are you two doing on the front page?
If you'll read the story, you'll see what we're doing there.
A story? Oh, that's right. There is a story. Jason Brill, principal of Clay City High School, played the hero yesterday as he hoisted Constance Brooks, Madison High English teacher, out of an open elevator shaft. Miss Brooks had been dangling by her fingertips three stories up with the elevator a floor above her when she was finally rescued. Oh, Connie, how awful. But, dear, I don't quite understand.
Don't quite understand what, Mrs. Davis?
Wouldn't it have been simpler to wait for the elevator like everybody else?
At 11 o'clock Thursday, Crime from The Whistler and Nightbeat. So if any of these sound good to you, tune in Wednesday night at 10, September 6th, or Thursday night at 10, September 7th. A star of many noir pictures of the 1940s and westerns in the 50s was born this Sunday, November 3rd. In his youth, actor Alan Ladd picked the nickname Tiny for his smaller frame, which, countered by his deep voice, kind of made him a larger-than-life Hollywood star on screen. But he used that nickname to his advantage early in his life after being derailed from his pursuit of Olympic-level swimming after an injury by going into business for himself and opening a hamburger stand called Tiny's Patio. On the side, he picked up work as a mic grip for Warner Brothers and made his first attempt at radio in 1935, working for $19 a week at CBS affiliate KFWB in Los Angeles, where he really sharpened his acting skills as he appeared in up to 20 different programs a week in various parts. The most notable was the lead presenter of the show, The Richfield Reporter, which delivered what they called news flashes of the week. In the later 1940s, he would star as former reporter Dan Holliday in the series Box 13. And at the time that show was being put together, Alan Ladd had already made his mark in films, appearing in over 50 of them. And though many were in uncredited roles, his parts often had him as an on-screen tough, like in Lucky Jordan, Whispering Smith, and a movie that pushed him to the top of the playbill, 1942's This Gun for Hire with Veronica Lake. In 1948, he decided to ride the wave of pre-recorded programs, which were in their infancy of acceptance, but embraced by Hollywood stars as a way to act at their convenience and keep their name and talent in the public eye without the tight schedule. Ladd had started a production company called Mayfair and used its resources to produce a new radio show called Box 13, which he took advantage of in several ways, including the embedded advertisement at the end of each episode.
Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
On Box 13, Ladd played the role of a retired reporter interested in pursuing stories for their intrigue rather than payment, and solve mysteries usually dealing with the underworld of crime. The show was made and released in syndication for a couple of years and was written by Russell Hughes, the man who gave Ladd his first radio job. Here's some sound from one of the episodes.
The next morning on deck, I saw Waring standing at the aft rail. I stopped because he looked around as though seeing if anyone were near. Then he raised his arm and threw something into the sea. I wondered what it might be. Then he turned quickly and came toward me.
Oh, hello, Holliday.
Hello, Waring.
Nice day, isn't it?
I hadn't noticed.
Has anything happened?
I don't know, has it?
What's the matter with you?
What did you throw overboard, Waring?
Throw overboard? Me? Nothing.
Look, Waring, we're all in this together. We've got to cooperate.
One of us is a killer. I won't cooperate with anyone. Now, let me get past.
All right. All right, go ahead. You left me standing there. I walked toward my cabin, down the passageway, and opened the door. Clayton.
Well, Holliday. Well, I thought you were on deck.
Well, I'm not. What are you doing in here?
Well, I wanted to see you.
You can't find me in that drawer.
Well, it was open when I came in.
It was not?
All right, it wasn't. So what?
That's my question. What were you looking for?
The missing page from that book.
Stop lying.
Where did you get that gun? What are you going to do? Now, please, don't.
Get out of here. Go on, get out.
I'm going to tell Mallory that you have a gun.
Sat down. Things were moving fast. I thought about Catherine Lansing. She'd been in the salon. I thought about Waring, who'd thrown something overboard. And what he'd thrown hadn't been paper, so it wasn't the page from the book. And I thought about Clayton searching my cabin. Which of the three was the killer? By now, I believed Mallory's story. Then I remembered something about Janice. And it tied in with what Mallory had said. tied in with the killer and something I'd seen. I left my cabin and hurried down the passage. I was almost to the end when...
Oh! Feeling better, sir?
Oh. Who hit me?
We don't know, Holliday.
Whoever hit me took the gun you gave me, Mallory.
You, Mallory? You gave him the gun?
What was the idea?
Well, where is it now?
That's what I'd like to know.
Obviously, Mr. Holliday, the killer has it.
That's right.
This is going to be an interesting lunch. You may serve, William.
Very good, sir.
Mallory, I know who has that gun.
Of course you do, Mr. Holliday.
Who is it?
Miss Lansing, when were you born? What month?
Month?
Go ahead, Holliday. Go on.
Well, Miss Lansing?
Well, July. Why?
Is that right, Mallory?
That's right.
Clayton.
What is this?
Answer the same question.
December.
He's telling the truth, Holliday.
And Waring, when were you born?
September.
Is that right, Holliday?
No, I don't think so. Waring, you were born in January, the month named after the Roman god Janus.
Be careful, Holliday.
What you threw overboard was a ring. A ring with a dark red stone. Your birthstone. A garnet.
That's perfectly true, Holliday.
Keep your hands on the table, all of you. And thank you for this gun, Mr. Holliday.
You are not welcome.
What do you intend to do, Waring? Kill all of us?
I'm not that stupid.
You killed my brother.
Yes, but I'm not going to Havana or anyplace else on this yacht. Now stay where you are. I'll shoot the first person who gets up from that table. And I'll shoot to kill.
Clayton, William.
No, sit still. Let him go.
Let him go?
Yes, the crew has instructions to let anyone go. They won't see him take the lifeboat. They'll let him go.
But he'll get away.
I don't think so. He'll be picked up. You see, Miss Lansing, we haven't been many miles from shore. Now, shall we go on with our lunch? Miss Lansing, Mr. Clayton, you've been put to a lot of trouble. I hope these checks will make you feel happier. I think they will. Mr. Holliday, you got a story, I hope.
Oh, yes, I did.
You see, Mr. Holliday, I had to do it this way. I had no proof that Waring was the murderer. I spent 10 years getting evidence, but no proof. I had a hope that he would break, put him under tension.
But that envelope with your attorneys.
Mr. Holliday, there was no envelope.
This Friday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock, science fiction from Dimension X and X-1. Then it's adventure from a great sounding broadcast of Cloak and Dagger and the Steel River Prison Break on Suspense. Then coming up this Saturday, it's a mix of shows, sitcoms at 10 with A Life of Riley, then AB's Irish Rose, followed by another hour of science fiction from the Theater of Romance and Dimension X.
What's the pitch, Mr. Lyman?
I can't tell you what the pitch is, Mr. Hayes, but I will tell you this. Give that vial of liquid back to Flaherty and let him cure himself.
Or poison himself.
Sure.
Look, Mr. Lyman, I wasn't born yesterday. Don't give me this elixir of life stuff. There ain't no such thing. And don't try to top me off this case by pretending you're on my side.
Mr. Hasten, I warn you, you're playing around with something much too big for you to handle. That vial is the only one of its kind in existence today. The liquid it contains will cure Flaherty if he drinks it.
These shows are coming up Friday, September 8th and Saturday, September 9th from 10 to midnight. On Tune to Yesterday. Also, as a reminder, you can read this schedule month to month at WRVO.org. All right, that's it for this week. If you have any questions or comments for me on the Tune to Yesterday dialer, Tune to Yesterday itself, full-time radio, anything like that, let me know. Email mark at WRVO.org. That's M-A-R-K at WRVO.org. Till next week. See you then.